Welcome to episode 9.5 of the Game Horizon podcast. This is basically a special two-player segment for Mass Effect 3, you know, with the endings and the spoilers and whatnot and yada, yada, yada. This was also recorded on March 25th, 2012. And again, this is kind of a warning for you guys. If you guys have not finished Mass Effect 3 or you're still planning to play Mass Effect 3, you might want to skip this episode. Instead, Anthony and I actually recorded a very special, close to 3-hour episode of the Game of Horizon podcast that also got released this week. So you might want to check your feeds and stuff and download that. So do you want to add anything before the guys leave and turn it off and stuff?
Yeah, if you listen to this and you get spoiled, That's on you, buddy. I have to say that.
Oh, geez. So anyways, so that said, we'll see you guys in a little bit. What's going on, dude?
Not a whole lot. Just this whole Mass Effect and Mass Effect.
You know, admittedly, like when you said that you're like so sick of this, I'm pretty sick of this too, which is why we're kind of dedicating like a whole episode about this whole Mass Effect 3 thing.
Yeah, I'm sick of it. I want to talk about other stuff like, you know, Tales games and stuff.
Yeah, which we did talk about in a previous episode. So again, in case you guys didn't even catch that fucking warning in the beginning, this is a Mass Effect 3 special. Special two-player segment. We keep changing the segment names. Special two-player segment on Mass Effect 3, everything, including the spoilers, the game, and all that stuff. This is, I guess you can kind of say it's kind of sort of a review, but not really. This is more so along the lines of talking about, like, the controversy and the endings and all that stuff, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and don't blame us if you get spoiled again.
Again, yes. Yeah. So, anyway, so to start off, to get this out of the way, coming from me, like, I really enjoyed my experience with the entire Mass Effect universe and stuff from beginning to end. I 100%ed both games, including I 100%ed the third game, even though it reset my fucking, like, galactic, like, progress to zero. But I'm not going to get into that. I had a really good experience with it. The combat is definitely really good and stuff. And I want to say that I had a wonderful time with it and stuff. But I have to say, though, that even though DLC is coming out for it, like, the next time I'm probably going to revisit it is about 2 years from now. And it's not because the game is terrible, in my opinion. It's just a choice that I am consciously making. So
it's a choice that you've told me you made with most every game you play.
Yes.
So it's nothing against Mass Effect.
Absolutely. So how about you, dude? Do you want to preface this discussion with anything and stuff?
Back in 2006, I bought me this little console called an Xbox 360, right?
So, Xbox 360.
So here's the story. I went in and, you know, I've been a BioWare fag for many years, even playing Jade Empire, which is their worst game, I think. So considered, you know, E3 came around, 2006, yay, Final Fantasy 13 was announced, yay, so was Versus. And, you know, then, you know, they showed this nice little demonstration with Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Mass Effect was assumed to be a trilogy that was going to be exclusive to the 360. Saw that trailer, was like, holy fucking balls, this is awesome. A year and a half passes, November 2007, I pick up my copy, and thus my crew-cut, weird-looking Shepard was born, who lived all the way through till the ending, you know, till last Friday and died in his ending. So, mm-hmm. So basically, my experience is you know, I've been reading the books and some of the comic books, and I'm a Mass Effect fucker, and I love this series, and I've enjoyed it, and I even enjoyed the ending, which is not, which is flawed. I will say it's flawed. Well, it is flawed, but it's not that bad, I don't think. So there you go.
So, or in layman's terms, he is a Mass Effect fan, not a fucker, but okay.
I'm a Mass Effect fag.
Whoa, no, let's not go there. Let's not go there.
I see, I'm always pushing the envelope. So there you go.
I can run with that in every single direction, but I'm not going to. So anyway, so how the hell are we going to talk about this? Like, it's obviously, okay, so another thing. So I have to say that ever since, like, I finished the game, I did a lot of research on the retake Mass Effect movement and stuff. And, you know, at first, and I am victim to this, as would most people, I thought that they wanted, what they wanted to have is basically kind of like this happy ending to Shepard's, you know, adventures and stuff. I naively thought that that's really what they wanted. But after, you know, and this is kind of like why it's taken us this long to actually get to this point of recording this, is because my slow ass hasn't finished the game. But also, I wanted to make sure that all sides are represented properly. And you know, Anthony will attest to this by my bipartisanship, I suppose, that I don't want to just represent my views on it. I want to be fair and represent both sides of the equation. And I was pleasantly surprised that a lot of Retake Mass Effect, or whatever the real name of this movement is, isn't necessarily that they want to have a happy ending to the game. What their argument was is that a lot of BioWare games out there have a kind of fulfilling conclusion to a lot of what happens after the end and stuff. Like, taking into account the emotional connection you've had and spent with, you know, all these characters in the whole 120 or so hours that you've spent with all three games. And I can definitely see that in that respect. I think that, you know, when you got the endings and stuff and you basically had like that generic video that played with different colors in between the real, you know, real ending, meaning like the Normandy showing up and stuff, and you know, in between your choice, you know, I feel that it didn't really kind of give me, I don't know, like a good closure to like some of the characters and stuff. I mean, on the other hand, I do understand why they did this. I mean, they, like, BioWare did this so that, you know, people can think about like where the series is headed, what's possibly going to happen with any of the characters and stuff. But it's like, I can see a lot of problems with it too. And I think that, you know, like for example, from an author standpoint, let's say BioWare hires me to write a book about, you know, like what happens after Mass Effect 3. How the fuck am I going to do that? Because there's such different disparate endings and stuff that you can just go with it, you know, in all different directions. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, here's my deal. I will agree the ending is flawed. Okay, it is flawed for those many reasons, because I have stated to you before that I feel that Mass Effect, and I'm not going into details in this, that BioWare games from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic are very heavily influenced by JRPGs in some ways. Not that they're completely, totally like JRPGs, but there's a lot of conventions in them that you find in JRPGs, particularly the way the JRPG does their ending. JRPGs, most JRPGs will do lengthy endings where they explain the fates of all the characters and stuff, you know. And hell, I'm a guy that liked the ending to Return of the Fucking King because of that shit. I like that ending, Alex. I mean, it was an hour and a half of exposition, but, you know, you got closure. So here's the point I'm making. The point is that, you know, they have lengthy endings. They kind of give you, you know, the fates of all the characters and all that. And usually BioWare games do this. The only problem that I really had with the Mass Effect 3 ending was it did not resolve the fates of the other characters. You know, I want to know what happens to Rex. I don't know what happens to Garrus. You know, I really do, don't you?
Yeah, so it's kind of, in a way, you're kind of agreeing with some of the kind of nagging complaints that the movement has. And I actually,
however, I am against the movement nonetheless, and I'll explain why later.
Yeah, because I mean, to me, like, they have a point there, but at the same time, I can see where BioWare is coming from with the ending. And, you know, Anthony and I have talked about this topic actually a lot more than the hour that we're going to spend actually talking about this. And one thing that I found, like, really fascinating is that there was one other series that actually had, like, this kind of reaction to it, in actually in a much more violent way in some cases than what's happening right now with Mass Effect.
Putting it lightly.
Yeah, no kidding, right? basically this series had its director and pretty much creator, he basically got like death threats from people, from fans basically saying, you have to change the ending because guess what? You know, like, this is not a fitting end to the series. Essentially what they did was, you know, there's some speculation as to whether or not this is true. The last two episodes of this series and stuff, they basically made it in such a way that the story wasn't just all about, like, what's happening to everybody. It's now a story that's dedicated to the main character and the psychological kind of aspects of kind of deconstructing this character from, you know, from the first episode to the last. And also possibly because that they ran out of budget. But again, that's open to debate. The series that I'm talking about, of course, is none other than Neon Genesis Evangelion, which, you know, had some very kind of religious elements to it. And of course, towards the end of, and you were invested in every character, like Misato Katsuragi, you know, like, you know, Gendo and stuff, and all these different
Rey,
characters
Ayanami,
and stuff.
And Asuka.
Rey and Asuka and all those guys and stuff. And until, of course, when you get to, I think it was episode 25, I want to say. And basically the second to the last episode where all of them stopped existing. And all of a sudden, the anime is and, you know, TV series is turned on its head into this psychological deconstruction of the main character Shinji's entire life, which parallels kind of like how BioWare is treating like the whole Mass Effect series, which is, you know, like the whole thing was all about you and the relationships that you feel and stuff like that, yada yada yada, boiled down to one simple choice that you have to do by yourself. And you don't even know what's going to happen to any of your, you know, your subordinates and stuff and any of your friends. Because guess what? That's how it ends.
Right, right, right. Well, here's the deal. I completely and totally see that point.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's look at the Evangelion angle again.
Mm-hmm.
You got a movie that came out, or two of them, Death and Rebirth, which was basically a recap. And then, like, the first half of the next movie. The first, like, well, not half, but maybe quarter, End of Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
End of Evangelion, while an alternate ending, still pissed people off.
Yeah.
And still pisses people off. And thus, now you have Rebuild of Evangelion. So.
Jesus.
So, which is currently ongoing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, here's my thing. Whatever they do to the ending, there's supposed to be some sort of big announcement regarding this in April.
Mm-hmm.
However BioWare is going to approach this, let's keep this in mind, folks. They're going to piss off people nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of angles you can approach this. Is this new alternative ending going to be DLC? That'll piss off a lot of the anti-DLC people. Is it going to be a patch? You're going to piss off the people that do like it, and they'll become vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you don't change enough of it in certain ways, some of these retake Mass Effect people, I have a hard time being formal to them, they will speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's going to happen, I'm going to be honest with you, this shitstorm is not going to end anytime soon. No matter what they do. You know, from the time they announce whatever they're going to do in April to what they're going to release, this shitstorm's not going to end even after that.
Mm-hmm.
There's just going to be so many people already so stirred up about this, emotionally involved one way or the other, that this shitstorm's not going to die anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Shitstorm's not going to end.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the ending for a second. So what ending did you get? Because there's really three possible, well, if you want to argue, there's really like 6 possible endings and stuff, depending on your galactic ranking, readiness, and whatever the fuck, like assets that you bring. And of course, I don't really know the requirements for the endings, but all I know is that there's 6 kind of general endings and stuff. And depending on the 3 choices that you get, or 2 choices, depending on like your readiness. Anyways, what is your ending?
I chose to synthesize synthetics and human life forms. Or biological life forms into one being.
Synthesis, basically.
Yeah, basically. What did you choose, sir?
I wanted to hear what your thoughts are on that too, because it would be interesting conversation, because like that's kind of, I think by talking about the endings and stuff, we can kind of try to figure out what other stuff maybe. Like, there's some, because I think that one thing that people are kind of ignoring in some ways is that like there's some stuff that's like, in order to talk about the controversy, we need to talk about the endings, like in detail, and of course the events of the game.
Okay,
in,
well, that series. Well, here's why I thought the ending was brilliant. Okay, whenever I talk about ending, I talk about end game sequence.
Right.
Okay, I've explained this to you. I'll explain it to the audience. When I talk about end game sequence, I don't just mean the ending or the final boss or whatever. That's all included. What I mean is just that final sequence, final level, whatever you want to call it, all wrapped up in together. That final act that closes the story, which includes the, you know, the final climactic showdown or whatever, and then the epilogue or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, the way I thought Mass Effect wrapped it up was brilliant. So for me, you know, that final act started once you went back to London. And then if you really want to get technical, I thought the sequence that was brilliant was when you were charging up towards that beam when you were running, and that Reaper was just blasting people out, you know, blasting people down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shepard gets hit and he's pretty much mortally wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that sequence where, you know, you're fucked up and your armor's even torn up, because I had fucking Terminus armor on.
Mm-hmm.
And you kill the two Reaper creatures. You mm-hmm. get in there, and then you have the confrontation with the Elusive Man, and then you find out what happens to Anderson and all that, and then, of course, you get to the final choices.
Mm-hmm.
I thought all that wrapped up together was fucking awesome. I really liked all those build up
mm-hmm.
to it. So if anything's weaker, it's some aspects of the epilogue, I think.
After you make the choice, basically.
Yeah, I think the epilogue itself is the weakest part of that end sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the confrontation with the Elusive Man. I you know, and it, I was upset what happened, you know, with David Anderson dying, because he was one of my favorite characters. But aside from that, you know, I my main problem is with that with the epilogue, because
now,
it expanded.
Were you able to convince the Elusive Man to kill himself?
No, I killed him.
Oh yeah, I was able to convince him.
Yeah, I shot him. I think I shot him.
You're like, I think you shot him.
I know. I'm pretty sure he didn't commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Mine, he did.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, you know what? I was happy because I killed him and I killed that little bitch, Udina. But that's mm-hmm. another story for another day.
Yeah.
I was happy when I killed Udina, though.
I did kill Udina also. So
I've been wanting to do that since the first game.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, it's to me, like, you know, I agree with you that the end sequence basically started when you basically got to London, and then after that huge kind of like fight, you know, in that kind of courtyard and stuff, and you fired the missiles and all that, and then you're running towards the beam of light. You know, I thought that was actually brilliantly executed, and I thought that was like really smart. Nagging aside, I felt like it, you know, like it was really cool that the second game actually finished off with a human Reaper. I felt that was like a brilliant thing to have there, because it's a good, satisfying battle at the end and stuff. And I felt that Mass Effect 3's, you know, that the last sequence was kind of, you know, like it, like, I don't know, like I felt like, I guess from a mainstream kind of perspective, it was kind of okay, but it was a lot of, but I almost felt that a lot of the game was that kind of hold the area for X number of time period. It's almost as if, like, you know, the multiplayer, the co-op thing that they made, you know, they kind of iterated on that multiple times in the game because they already had it made and stuff, which I was kind of disappointed in that a little bit.
Well, here's my argument towards that. It's not exactly mainstreamy how the confrontation between, you know, the elusive man and Shepard is.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it because it's more of a battle of the wits.
Yeah.
As opposed to a shoot 'em up or a final boss battle. I that's why I really like it, because it's not, you know, it shows that video games can have confrontations that are just emotionally involving.
I see. So
basically, as like fighting, you know, Ganon rising from the ruins of his castle can be.
So basically you consider the last boss fight to be with Elusive Man and that whole conversation piece.
Yeah. I don't even know if you would technically call it a boss battle per se, as we traditionally know it, but I would say more of a final confrontation, and I think it was more of a battle of the wits, which is not nice for a video game to do, as opposed to let's have an epic battle between each other.
Yeah, I totally get that. And actually, the whole time I was talking to Elusive Man, I thought like he was gonna like burst out with wings and start fucking shooting at me, and I was kind of actually dreading that.
Kind of like you know what, the first Mass Effect kind of did that too. With
Saren?
Yeah, with, remember, you know, you could convince Saren to kill himself, and then he turns into some weird cat thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually kind of almost cringing and stuff, and I was actually really surprised that it was just a conversation piece and stuff.
You thought he was going to turn into Kefka.
Well, I think that it was satisfying for me because, like, basically he was kind of like, he was losing his mind, and he was just like, no, I'm doing this for humanity! You know, and he says, Shepard, I failed, I can't control them. And he basically points his gun in his head and he kills himself, and I was like, Yeah, I'm convincing. Yes. Oh. So going further in, though, the choices and stuff, like, when I first played the ending and stuff and got there, not to say that I've actually played it again. I actually sat there for a good 30, 40 minutes and stuff and tried to think about what I wanted for the world that my Shepard was going to inhabit or not inhabit in. And I told you about this. It took me 45 minutes to finally figure out a choice until something that I thought of, like, that until something, there was something there that basically reminded me, like, of something really important, which is, wait a second, they are not giving me enough information to go by, you know, to make an educated decision. And I had my friend Chris, like, right beside me and stuff, and he couldn't tell me anything because he didn't want to spoil it and stuff. And because the game kind of sprung it on you at the last minute, it's almost as if, like, all the reliability of the narrator kind of disappeared along with a lot of the elements of the game, like some of the choices that you've made early on, which is why I'm kind of like, okay, so it's either I destroy the Reapers, I try to control them, or I just merge with them. And my friend Chris brought up some very interesting ideas behind this, because he thought that, you know, the most surefire, like, choice that you could do in any of those choices would be to destroy them, because the entire series has been building up towards that. And then he said, the thing is with the synthesis, and the control ending, is that both of those endings require some sort of blind faith, you know,
right.
Like, and I couldn't really wrap my head around that concept, because the thing is, like, why would I trust, you know, the Elusive Man? Because he's been trying to kill me this whole time, you know, even though he helped me out in the second game. And then, you know, and why am I going to trust the Reapers if all they've been doing is to try to destroy me this whole time?
But there's also this theory going around that you're indoctrinated as well.
But do you have Reaper tech, though?
What do you mean?
Like, I mean, you know how in the second game and stuff, like, they basically recreated you from scratch and all that stuff. They didn't really, like, even Miranda says they didn't put anything that would control you and stuff. Even Lucid Man says that. I want him to be 100% the way that he is. So, I mean, what is the theory then that Shepard is actually indoctrinated?
Well, from what I understand, it's because he's been around a lot of Reapers. If you're around a lot of Reapers, which Shepard is, admittedly so, they do get into your head slowly. And the reason they don't necessarily throw the... There's a couple hints, you know, the whole nightmare sequences and you know, and the thing, you know, it doesn't explicitly show because you're Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
So the indoctrinated theory is basically you're still under the influence of the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the boy is trying to convince you not to destroy the Reapers at all.
Mm-hmm.
In any capacity. Mm-hmm. But even that theory has flaws too, though. So
yeah, because the little kid, the little kid was basically positing at the end was that yes, the we've been doing this for like generations now and years and millennia, you know, with the Reapers destroying everybody and cleaning, wiping out the entire galaxy. However, you know, he even mentioned himself that it's not working anymore.
Right.
You know, because obviously, like, they've gotten to a point where, you know, there's a stalemate because Shepard is there. She, you know, he or she reached, you know, the catalyst, right, which is the little kid. In which particular case, like, one of the things that I kind of got annoyed with is that of all the decisions, and this is what I was getting at earlier, of all the decisions that you made in Mass Effect 3, you were always given the proper context to make the right decision or make some sort of informed decision.
Right.
And, you know, when my friend was basically saying that you have to do blind faith on one decision, that kind of just... is kind of preposterous because now you have to kind of pick, like, arbitrarily, like, what ending you think is good.
I don't know if it's blind faith per se.
You don't think so?
No, not necessarily. I think some of the, you know, the choices between the decisions,
mm-hmm,
make, like, for example, you know, the whole thing with if you destroy them, you know, mankind really, or biological beings threaten to destroy themselves with sentience.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting about this is there's this guy, I always forget his name. He's actually a futurist and a scientist. And his belief is they asked him, do you believe in God? Now, this goes into Mass Effect, okay? And he basically said, I don't know if God exists, but I will tell you, man will build one eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And what he means by that is he believes that we will create digital beings that are godlike.
Mm-hmm.
So basically that goes into Mass Effect. What I'm saying here is essentially the Reapers themselves are not sympathetic. They're very godlike in their mm-hmm. judgment, you right. know. You know, they're very godlike and they're very destructive. They're trying to convince what they're saying here is there's three consequences. And let's put it in this way. They're thinking like a machine in a logical sense.
Right.
Okay. Because their actions are logical. Now, I know some people are saying that BioWare tried to portray the Reapers as sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was the case at all.
I don't see it either.
No. What I think BioWare portrayed the Reapers as they did. The Reapers are not evil,
mm-hmm.
but they think like machines.
Mm-hmm.
They have they're sentient, but they think like machines. Still, they do not have an ounce of humanity in them.
Mm-hmm.
They just think like machines. They're not evil. They're not thinking of you know, they're not doing it for any cause. They're thinking like machines and they're thinking logically.
Mm-hmm.
And logically is to annihilate all advanced races. Mm-hmm. So that way other synthetic beings will not wipe out their being. They're doing what they feel is part of a system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a machine does, right?
Yeah.
It follows the system. So essentially, when you reach this ending, I think the Reapers are trying to deter you, and they're giving you legitimate reasons,
mm-hmm.
as legitimate reasons, and they're telling the truth because they're thinking logically. They're thinking like a machine. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't think the Reapers possess human traits. If you look at all, you know, if you look at all their appearances from the previous games, sure, they're menacing, but they're not evil. If you look at Sovereign, if you look at Harbinger, they're all logically thinking machines. And that's what I'm trying. They're weighing the options in a logical manner to Shepard. And you have to think from that logic. I'm not saying the ending's perfect by any means. I'm just saying that's my case for it. What do you think?
Well, I think that what BioWare's been doing, and I don't know if they've been winging the story from the very beginning. I mean, obviously, they tried to map out where the beginning is and where the end is of the series and tried to build like a compelling story in between. I don't really know how they do it. However, one thing that I really noticed, and this is something that we talked about before, is that there are parallels to what's happening in the overall grand scheme of things into the microcosm that it is in the within the character development of each of the characters in the game. So, like, for example and stuff, right now, you know, like, you know, the whole Reaper thing and stuff, it's all about the organics versus the synthetics, right? I mean, you're basically trying to fight trying to fight against the extinction of your species and the entire species in the entire world. Basically, everybody in the world versus the Reapers, you know? You see that twice actually being paralleled in Mass Effect 3. One, which is very obvious, which is the Genophage. You know, between the Solarians and the, you know, and the, you know, like Rex's race, I forgot now already. I can't believe Krogans. I forgot it. The Krogans, yes, thank you.
Welcome.
Where you're basically forced to make that decision whether you want to control their evolution because of how destructive they are. Again, the overlying theme, which is chaos. If you want more chaos in the world to allow them to live, or you want to withhold them by still keeping the Genophage live.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's one. And of course, your decision, you know, so whatever your decision is, that's fine and dandy. You encounter it a second time, with this time a little bit more literal, you know, to what's happening in the grand scheme of things.
I'm thinking?
Yes.
Okay.
So that is another thing, and that's basically like, you know, the Geth have the ability now, like the possibility of getting, like, you know, being sentient, being more human-like. And you were given that choice, whether or not you want that to happen, you know, to the Geth, risk the Quarians not helping in the war, or vice versa. And that is a very delicate balance to choose. Now, that has three different outcomes, as I've learned. In my game, the Geth survived and the Quarians died. In your game, both survived.
Right.
Which, if you think about it, it's kind of similar to, like, what in some ways to what's happening in the ending. Whether there is a middle ground to things, which is to work with them, which is something that which is why I wasn't surprised that you picked the synergistic kind of ending, because you basically tried to make amends with both the Quarians and the Geth, and of course to destroy the Reapers, and then, you know, the control the Reapers ending, you know, which is, you know. If you think about it, you know, from the very beginning, the Geth were were Quarian slaves,
right?
You know, and that's not a mistake that they already put that in the game, you know, and that they want you to deal with that first and foremost, and then you have to deal with a bigger issue.
I think a lot of everything, and I even think to some degree, the conclusion was planned out ahead. I think just the problem for me arises is that they did not expand on the fates of the other characters.
Yes.
I think that's my key problem. And and you know what? I am justified to be a critic of it, but I feel in a lot of ways I'm not justified to demand anything out of them, but we'll talk about that in a moment. I have to say that.
Well, let's talk about that right now, because I feel that, you know, as far as the ending goes, like, it could stand by itself. However, when you're demanding people to play 120 hours of a game, and you've mentioned this to me before, and you're asked to play through three games and spend a lot of time with these characters, the least you can do is basically tell me how, you know, how they're doing. In some ways, too, like, I feel that, like, I don't know. Did you, like, another, here's another good parallel, okay? How about, you know, how about the parallel with something And Mass Effect is always compared to Star Wars. Like, do you feel like you got a lot of closure from when, like, they ended Return of the Jedi the way that it is and stuff? Like, and you, were you even invested in some of the characters to try to figure out what's going to happen with Luke and Leia and Han after that? I mean,
you know, surprisingly, you know, what's interesting about Star Wars is the thing with that was with the Return of the Jedi. I thought it was a fitting. I actually really like, I think the confrontation between Emperor and I'll get to what your point. The Emperor and Darth Vader and Luke is actually a brilliant sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I do, you know, I do think, you know, there could have been a little bit more character closure, of mm-hmm. course, but I think it was a satisfying conclusion. My problem with Return of Jedi is with Ewoks, but who doesn't bitch about Ewoks, right?
Okay.
Who doesn't? Ewoks and Jar Jar Binks are the most hated things in Star Wars.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, but that's beside the point. What I'm saying here is this, is essentially when you have how can you put it? When you have an ending that you invested in, the thing about Star Wars too, I think people forgave at the time was they thought Lucas was going to make more movies too afterwards.
I see.
So there you go. And then, of course, you know, if you're really truly a hardcore Star Wars fan, you know, there's all those Star Wars novels out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much, you know, wrap up the story. You know, even Chewbacca gets crushed by a moon. But
I mean, but that's after the fact, though.
But back then, though, there was still, you know, here's the difference. They did not say it was Lucas at the time did not say it was the end of the story.
I see.
He, you know, there was still some. Remember, he had said that he had 9 episodes planned.
Mm-hmm.
Not just 6.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest. I think George Lucas is a great idea man,
mm-hmm.
but I think he talks out of his ass. He's the Peter Molyneux of film.
Yes.
Because you know he says all these things that he contradicts himself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know he says, oh well, you know it's always been planned for this and this and this. But if you actually look at old notes and stuff, a lot of stuff was different.
Right.
You know, like it. You know, constantly believed. You know, one of the biggest things is known that Leia was actually Luke's love interest,
mm-hmm.
and he had planned a love triangle between him and Han Solo and Princess Leia. But then he goes around and says, "Oh, they've always been sister and brother." And then the whole thing about, you know, Darth Vader being Anakin,
mm-hmm.
that's another crock of shit too. I think mm-hmm. he added that in as he went.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference with George Lucas. With BioWare, they said this is the end of Shepard's story. I think what pissed off people, and I'll relate to him to a degree, is I think what got people riled is that the ending was not long enough, and they say there's plot holes and there's some things not explained. I think some things there are things that are best left unexplained.
Mm-hmm.
Like one guy was complaining that they didn't explain what the Reapers are, where the Reapers came from. I think any explanation they could come with would be lame.
Mm.
I think it's one of those things where you just leave them to be these kind of mysterious creatures.
Well, I think, though, that I can see their arguments because for a game that even has a codex that is painstakingly giving you a huge amount of information and context about the world, it's really weird that they leave certain details just kind of left unsaid, quote unquote.
Right. You know? Their complaints are justified to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I will not deny that. But are there actions? And I've told you this before, you know, my mm-hmm. problem with the movement is the way they're acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about people who just joined the movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the people running it. I've seen some of those guys attack people who like the ending. I've seen, you know, I've seen them act like complete douchebags and stuff. Well, here's my point. They're not. They have the right to critique. Like you and I do every fucking week on this podcast. You and I mm-hmm. come on here and we critique games or critique aspects of the industry or talk about things we like. Everyone mm-hmm. has that right. If I said we didn't, I'd be a goddamn hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's a different thing when you go around demanding and acting like you're higher up than everyone, that you use charity as a fucking shield to fucking shield you away from your critics, and you attack BioWare personnel personally, like Greg Mazuka, who illustrated that point, or you attack people every whim that you get. Every whim that you attack, it, not everyone, but you attack anyone that says they like the ending, which I have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a few days back, I tweeted to the official Mass Effect Twitter account that I like the ending, and they're like, kind of gave me a generic, not generic, but they kind of gave me, oh, we're glad you enjoyed it. You know, what endings you like? And what else did you like about the game? So I told them, and then about maybe 5 minutes later, I got about 14 people who attacked me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were people belonging to the retake of Mass Effect. They called me stupid. They called me retarded. They called me dumb. Let's be honest. Their actions are sickening.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem. And I still think, regardless how flawed the endings is, you do not have the right to demand them in this manner. And even if you look at some of the stuff on the retake Mass Effect, not a lot of it is civil.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem with the movement.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like they're haranguing for attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. The whole fiasco with the fucking charity.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. You know, first they use the charity because, of course, Penny Arcade supports the movement, which is fine, I guess. But, you know, they use the fucking charity. Mm-hmm. And then people are donating to the charity, thinking it's money, giving money to BioWare to change the ending, where it's really helping kids out. And then they find out, oh, it's not for the ending. It's not for the ending, but it's for helping out kids. I want my fucking money back.
Mm-hmm.
How self-entitled is that? How fucking selfish is that? That you donate money and then you realize it's not for an ending, for your own self-gratification, but it's to help out a fucking kid, so you still want your fucking money back.
Mm-hmm.
This is my problem with gamers. So that's my rant. I mean that's why I do not support this movement. I think it's a crock of shit. I think there's a lot more to it. Mm-hmm. I think it's as a crock of shit as Kony 2012 is.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that, but that's how I feel about the movement.
Yeah, I mean, like what you mentioned, and, you know, like what I mentioned earlier and stuff, there's a lot of valid concerns about, like, the Mass Effect ending. But I don't think that it warrants, like, a reporting to the FTC or even masquerading it as some sort of charity thing. I think that's kind of very underhanded. And actually, like, it's kind of disrespectful, disgusting. It kind of shows like the bad side of video gaming and stuff in a way. Like, as gamers and stuff, like, come on, like, if you think about the way that you're trying to make people support your cause. So basically you're getting them to, like, donate on a different cause because of your cause. I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous. Even Penny Arcade actually addressed that by saying, you know, that Child's Play should be the cause. It's not supposed to be like a piggy bank that we're dumping shit on there because you guys just don't like the Mass Effect ending. That's kind of ludicrous. You know, I agree with Penny Arcade on that. As far as, like, their kind of guerrilla tactics to try to, like, make, like, BioWare notice them, I mean, again, that's some really stupid self-entitled bullshit and stuff. Again, like, if you just basically emailed, like, BioWare and stuff and continued on with a more civil type of, you know, like way of, like, being, you know, being visible, you'd probably not have as negative impact, you know, like, on everybody else who supports your cause as you already have. You know, I think that...
And it's not just random people in the cause. I'm seeing this from people who are close to the top, or if they're not on the top of the campaign.
Yeah, it's... And again, like, who's to say that, you know, that that other people are dumb because they didn't agree with you? Jesus Christ, we're people here. There's something called, like, you know, First Amendment rights and stuff. We have free speech.
Exactly. I don't know what BioWare is going to do. And I don't know if this was planned or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of mystery surrounding what their true intentions with the ending is. However, I will say this, though. I will say that they are they are in right to keep the ending the way they want it, or they can change it if they want it. But I don't want to see them to give in to a bunch of self-entitled little brats like the Retake Mass Effect movement is. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I do not support, I do not find any credibility in this group. And it's kind of funny because there's, I mentioned this to you before the podcast, mm-hmm. but there's two incidents in other media that's similar to this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one incident you're familiar with, one you're not. Mm-hmm. The first incident is Michael Bay said mm-hmm. that he's involved with this new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. Mm-hmm. He says he's not going to call it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's going to call it Ninja Turtles and make them aliens. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, that did piss me off to an extent. But mm-hmm. I didn't go on and say, oh, die, Michael Bay, like a lot of people did.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, before like any of those Retake Mass Effect people basically flame me for saying the Bill of Rights is basically the First Amendment, which I, of course, mistakenly said. It is not the First Amendment. So, yeah, so lower your pitchforks and be a man.
Okay. Anyway,
just saying, because I'm pretty sure, like, if somebody is listening to this, was a part of that thing, they're going to nitpick every single thing that we said, you know?
Ooh, I can't, you know what? I hope I get my first hate mail.
Oh, geez.
Because I will read it. You know I will. But anyway, mm-hmm. anyway, let me continue on my tirade. The Ninja Turtles incident, which mm-hmm. happened. Michael Bay said he's going to make them aliens. People went yes. on the internet wishing Michael Bay death. Mm-hmm. Basically, now mind you, I know you are not a Michael Bay fan, and I know you do not like Transformers, but I also am correct me if I'm wrong, I know you're not a big fan of his films, correct?
Right.
But you've never once said go die, Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's fine to not like his films and be critical, but I think you guys need to chill when you send him death threats over saying something. And in all honesty, a guy told me he thinks Michael Bay did this on purpose to stir interest on the film, that he's not necessarily going to be, that he's not necessarily going to do that. He just said that to stir interest.
I don't know about that, because I've never seen that actually ever done in media before. Or do I remember?
Well, but that's yes, but here's the deal. The reason you haven't seen it done is it's becoming more and more prevalent, this kind of fan reaction.
I see.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a brilliant tactic if that's what it is. I'm not saying it is. Mm-hmm. And one thing, too, is one of the creators, I forgot which one, they were very interested. They're actually working on the script, and someone said it's very, very sort of accurate. Not uh-huh. accurate, but a brilliant script.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So, what do you have to say about this Ninja Turtles thing?
Again, it's. I will react to it as I have always reacted to a Michael Bay movie, which is I'm not gonna spend money on it.
So you won't see it.
Nope.
Okay. Well, I figured as much.
But that's the thing, though. It's like, if you really don't like the outcome and stuff of something or whatever, don't support it. Like literally, if BioWare, let's say BioWare amends the ending and stuff like that, and it's still not to your satisfaction, or you hear it from other people and stuff, don't buy it. No one is forcing you to. BioWare is not pointing a gun to your head and telling you to buy this DLC. The only misstep that I've seen BioWare has done in releasing Mass Effect 3, other than the nagging points about it, we pretty much clearly covered in this episode, is the Prothean DLC. Now, BioWare claims that if you play the game without the Prothean DLC, you will still have a very kind of rich experience with the game, which is kind of true. But there are elements, there are specifically, from what I've heard, two story events in the game that if you have the Prothean character, that they will actually give you a lot more details to the accounts, you know, into the events of like leading to the Reaper invasions and all that stuff or whatever. I don't know what it is. I didn't play it with it. And to me, that's kind of disappointing.
I did. I don't know. I don't remember if there was anything that stood out from the Prothean DLC.
You other sure? than
had a Prothean.
Did you play with the Prothean character throughout uh-huh. the game?
Yes, I did. Javik?
Yeah.
I thought he was a great character, actually.
See, that's the thing. I don't know what I'm missing.
I don't even think there, you know, if there's anything, it's more of his character development that I saw that you would be missing.
No, I heard that there was a lot more to like the Prothean legend that's actually covered by Javik and stuff.
I don't know. I don't remember.
That's a bad thing, sir.
No, but maybe it wasn't that important.
I don't know, because I've talked to a couple of people who said, yeah, it's pretty significant. You know, it gives you more context to the invasions and stuff. And I'm like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember. I'll have to leave it at that. So I can't deny or validate those claims.
You have to research that for me next week, then.
Yes, I will.
Okay. So the bottom line is, I think that, you know, in closing for me, this is why, like, I feel that Mass Effect 2 was a much better game than 3. It's not because of just the there's basically a lot of weird things about this game. In some ways, like, it's, you know, there are some aspects of the game that's not even that kind of polished compared to 2. And ever since I've seen those sections, it kind of gave me this kind of weird kind of feeling playing through it, that it's like, you know, like, there's a lot of things that bug me about this game. Like the fact that there's only really, like, you know, like a limited number of side missions and stuff. The Reaper, you know, horn, whatever, that if you scan too many planets and stuff, it's just, there's just some really weird decisions that BioWare made for this particular game that's really confusing. And in some ways, in the case of like the controversy, really infuriating. But on the flip side and stuff, you know, and I'll reiterate something that everybody's been reiterating, the fact that we have such a strong opinion on a video game series ever is kind of a good sign, because, you know, this proves to everybody that you can have the same kind of emotional engagement, you know, with games as you can with any other media possible.
Yeah, that's a fair sentiment. I don't think we've ever seen a reaction to an ending like this in a video game ever.
You don't see people complaining about, like, Super Mario Brothers 3's ending or anything like that.
I'm going to go to the FTC because the princess was not in another castle. Anyway, whatever, I messed that all up. But my point is essentially, here's my point. We've never seen anyone complain about any ending in this capacity or be so controversial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any ending. I've seen, you know, I've been involved, not involved or working, but I've been following this industry for most of my life, you know.
For
about maybe 20, 22, 23 years, 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen a reaction to any ending like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it also goes to show that, you know, like people... Like, it's weird how, like, people's, like, opinions have, like, so much more sway because of the internet and stuff. And I think that what's interesting, though, is that how, you know, how the reaction is, you know, like, as far as, like, all these things are happening. The reactions meaning, like, the reactions of, you know, the fans who do support the retake Mass Effect ending. The people who just are okay with the ending and don't give a shit. I'm okay with the ending. Let's put it that way. I'm okay with it. It's not the best ending in the world. I feel that Knights of the Old Republic had a better ending in a lot of ways.
And there's worse endings, too.
And there's worse endings also. Like, you know, like the original Alien 3 for, like, the Super Nintendo, where you basically went through hundreds of levels only to have, like, the words "the end" appear in your screen.
Or any game from LJN where it says the world is at peace.
Well, the funny thing is, like, Alien 3 is an LJN game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Any game from LJN. LJN, you know, games were horrible. Or even if, and I'm, well, I might not get shit for this, actually. The BioShock ending.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I thought it was a little on the weak side.
Yeah. So, I mean, all in all and stuff, it's like it'll be interesting to see if there's any other games that create the same level of, you know, like, kind of emotional involvement as something like Mass Effect. Granted, it's not a Call of Duty. It's not a, you know, $1 billion seller, like, you know, like the same capacity as that game. But, you know, in the years to come, we're going to take a look at all the things that we've been doing, like, now and stuff, and, like, what's been going on and all that. And we're going to see this as kind of, like, just a part of how video games grew.
By the way, before we close this, what is it with Mass Effect? And I mean that in the way that, in one way or the other, it causes some sort of controversy.
Mm-hmm.
It always has.
Yeah.
I mean, look what the first game did with the whole infamous Fox News incident.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
I mean, that was stupid, but I'm still saying there's something about those games that people have always been talking about.
I think it's everything. I think every single controversy that Mass Effect has had comes with the power of choice. And all the controversy surrounding it is with, you know, surrounds, you know, that specific action that you can do in the game.
But why did not other, if it's just the power of choice, then why did not, you know, everything from Baldur's Gate to Mass Effect get that sense of controversy?
Well, back then, like, I mean, back in Baldur's Gate, like, video games are not really that, like, violent video games are in the forefront of, like, controversy back in the day. Like, Baldur's Gate was a glimmer in, like, you know, in people's eyes at the time, even though it was, like, one of the, you know, like, it was a game of the year for that particular time period. But I think that something with a mass appeal, see what I did there, as Mass Effect, you know, there's definitely a lot more kind of magnifying glasses pointed at it and kind of scrutinizing it and stuff because of how popular it is.
Right.
You know, and again, the biggest thing about this is, and stuff, other than the you know, its mainstream and massive, you know, mass appeal, is the choice, the power of choice. And I think that it's interesting how, you know, the power of choice is basically at the forefront of all the controversies in this game.
Right. Well, that's so, I think that's a good way to do it.
Okay. So because it is like this is kind of like more like a rant than anything else, I want you to actually like close out this episode.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Let's try something new.
Ah, okay. Well, I got to say, you know, there's one thing when you critique something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a line you cross when you demand and act like a complete douchebag about it.
Uh-huh.
And when you do dirty tactics like that, I don't think your cause is worthy to even be noticed by me. So,
okay,
that's my last word.
No, I'm talking about the podcast, but okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's your turn, buddy.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah, to close the podcast.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So, any last words, Alex, before we close this out, then?
Go to the website, GamerHorizon.com. Remember, we do have, in case you just opened your iTunes and this is the only thing that downloaded, there was another episode before this, and that one is almost 3 hours long, and it's really cool, really awesome.
Yeah, it's a kick-ass episode. And you can find my YouTube channel at youtube.com/MagusX1 or /user/MagusX1 if you're archaic, and... and whatnot. You'll find all kinds of content from me, you know. And you could also follow our Twitters, Eternity in Black on Twitter. So it's twitter.com/EternityInBlack. That's Alex's Twitter. And mine is twitter.com/MagusX1. That's really fucking unpredictable, huh? So with that, guys, we're out.